Today's Fan Run Podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
The Masters is back, and this week DraftKings has given you 100-1 odds on the golfer if you're choosing to finish in the top 10. If you haven't tried DraftKings, go download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 if the golfer if you're choosing finishes in the top 10. That's code FANRUN in all caps to turn $1 into $100 for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older in Tennessee only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is 3 and Out with Nate Hodges, Houston Kress, and Davey Hudson. The show that...
Yep, that's what I thought.
Fan Run Radio.
Today, we are here to move volunteer athletics forward to greatness. It is my sincere honor and privilege to welcome Dr. Danny White to the great University of Tennessee.
Really excited to be here. So proud to step into this unbelievable opportunity. I've never worked at the big brand place until now, and I actually like the fact that the brand needs to be polished a little bit. Let's build some positive momentum. If you're upset or you're negative, text your buddy. Don't put it on social media.
No. You were doing fine. You had been courteous and you had established trust. And now this ham-handed segue, it won't do.
Of the people that we hire, a head coach that I can trust unequivocally. We obviously have some work to do on our football program, as the chancellor mentioned, from a leadership standpoint and candidly a competitive standpoint.
We can dance if we want to, we can leave your friends behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, that no friends of mine. Say, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance. Oh, we can go when we want to, night is young and so am I. And we can dress real neat, but my heart's through our feet, and surprise them with a victory cry. Say, we can act if we want to, if we don't, nobody will.
Welcome in to the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. I can't even do it. I mean, okay.
It's Optimism Tuesday.
It's a basketball Optimism Tuesday edition. Huh. Did you see Baylor last night? Oh, man. Historic team.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one of the few blemishes on their record was that Kansas Jayhawks double-digit beatdown. And, I mean, come on. We beat Kansas. We're right there.
By 20.
We're right there. Just gotta play
right there.
Our A game more. And we're national champions.
There it is. Play the A game
more.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
Baylor was on their A game last night. It just didn't feel fair.
Good for them.
I have a weird take. I'm actually surprised Gonzaga cut it to 10 at halftime and made it into some sort of game for a minute. At least some people thought this might become a game.
Excuse me.
But I told you, man, Baylor's too physical. And I don't mean that in a, like, they didn't goon it up necessarily. They're just too strong and fast. And
defensively, what they did last night, maybe the best performance I've seen.
Well, and then they're shooting the lights out right now.
Well, that's the thing. Were they like 6 of 7 from 3 to start the game? I know they were 5 for 5.
I mean, it was
tough shots, too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was a stretch. It was the second half. I think it had gotten to like 9 and then 11 or 12. And Baylor hits a tough deep three, and then Gonzaga misses a wide open three. And I'm like, you can't, like, you're just not going to. I mean, they shot 43.5% from three for the game. Wasn't Baylor leading the country in 3-point percentage anyway? This wasn't like a fluke in the Final Four where they, you know, shot it great. And then Gonzaga, I mean,
were they leading the country, really?
That's what one of the guys said on the broadcast last night.
Wow. I didn't know that. I admitted yesterday, hadn't watched a lot of Baylor. Do you think Gonzaga was spent?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do think that was part of it. You could tell early on. I think they were beat up, too. I mean, you saw, like, Tilly hurt his ankle in the Final Four game. He's getting stretched out late in that game. I mean, they can say they weren't. I'm not sure it would have mattered. You know, I mean, your only chance to really beat Baylor is for them to maybe not shoot. I mean, they shot as well from three as they did from the floor, basically. Mm-hmm. And they were 16 of 18 from the line. So it's not like you could, you know, foul them.
What's crazy is Gonzaga actually shot better from the field.
Well, Baylor dominated the rebounding with their with their size and athleticism. 38-22.
Yeah. And we talked about this for Tennessee all season long. Gonzaga got up 49 shots. They were 25 of 49, 51%. Baylor got up 67 shots. Mm-hmm. 18 more shots.
Well, Gonzaga turned it over 14 times, too. Mm-hmm. And Baylor 9. So you got a 5 turnover differential there. I don't know. Gonzaga was just sloppy, too. That's why I think, I mean, they were sloppy and they didn't shoot well, which, I mean, they had to be spent. Had to be.
I'm sure there was some aspect of that.
Or they didn't play well. It doesn't really matter.
I just thought Baylor's defense was so, they were so fast.
Swarming defense.
I mean, normally, you know, Gonzaga does one of those crossover step back dribbles. It's a wide open looking shot. And Baylor's just, it was like a magnet.
It was. And there were parts, too, where, I mean, you could just see, like, Baylor was out hustling Gonzaga.
Yep.
You got to the point to where, I mean, Baylor was in foul trouble for a good part of that game, especially with some of their big guys down low, but they just had so many. Mm-hmm. It really didn't matter, and they just never let their foot off the gas, and it ultimately led to them never trailing in the game.
Yeah, I actually thought Baylor didn't play overly physical, but they definitely got on the Gonzaga guys more on the perimeter with their hands, with, you know, playing physical around the basket. But when you're the more aggressive team and you get to loose balls or whatever, like, taking some of those fouls is worth it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we said. That's what we said how Gonzaga would lose. I didn't think it would be this big of a margin. But, I mean, you know, we talk about
– it was wire to wire.
We talk about how teams, like, they have a range they can play in. And this Baylor, if 100 – is the best game ever played by any team. Like, it's 100 is like, if this team plays 100, it cannot be beaten. I don't know what Baylor. I mean, this Baylor team lost to Kansas in the regular season on the road, and then lost to Oklahoma State in the Big 12 conference tournament, and that's it the entire season. Mm-hmm. I mean, so for all the talk about Gonzaga being perfect, I mean, the Baylor team was almost perfect. And so I don't know. Let's say Baylor's range is 96 to, you know, 85. Like, you weren't going to – I mean, they played a 95. Like, you can't – you mm-hmm. weren't going to beat them unless – Gonzaga was going to have to shoot better than Baylor to win the game. But Gonzaga was going to have to be better on offense because they're not as good defensively. They're just not.
I thought after the first 10 minutes, the game was fairly even. I mean, there were little runs here and there, but the first 10 minutes by Baylor, it was unbelievable. They were – I know they were 5 for 5 from three. I think at one point they were 7 of 9 in the first half.
Well, it wasn't so much they were making their shots. They just were getting so many offensive rebounds.
Yeah, they were doing that. Well, I mean, when you start 5 for 5 from three, I mean, that it just felt like every time Gonzaga
was
not.
I think it was like 7 to 1 on the boards early.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Gonzaga was getting 0 second chance opportunities. Mm-hmm. And then Baylor would miss a shot, get a rebound, kick it out for a three, and Drano from, you know, 27 feet, 30 feet, tough shots. And They got up quick. They just jumped on them. And then it still felt like Gonzaga had enough time. But then Baylor just ratcheted up the defense even more. When they went into slumps, it's kind of like the opposite of Tennessee. Like, Baylor went into a offensive slump, and they just completely ratcheted up their defense to create fast break opportunities, to create, you know, steals, turnovers, all that. And Gonzaga just looked swarmed all night. Very impressive performance by Baylor. I mean, that was first title in program history, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
I felt like the only chance Gonzaga had to make a game of it is when they did cut it to 10 at halftime. I was like, they can't let Baylor come out and push it to a 15-point.
Right.
Like that, like, they have to come out at halftime, like, score the first two buckets, make this a 5 to 6 point game, and then keep it there for maybe a little bit, and then, you know, then you hit a couple shots in a row, and all of a sudden it's a 1 point game, or you get the lead or whatever, and give Baylor a reason to get tight. They never had a reason to get tight. So when they did pull the trigger in the second half, I mean, those shots were just going down.
Gosh, those first 10 minutes. At the 10:09 mark in the first half, it was 29-10. At that point, Baylor was on pace for right at 120 points to 40 pace for Gonzaga. Like, they just jumped on him.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm literally shocked that
if you look at the game flow, like, after that, yeah, it gets a little bit tighter, but basically Baylor just coasted.
Yeah.
They kind of just kept, you know,
16. It was just back
that working range. It was unbelievable. Hit a lot of mid-range jumpers, did Baylor.
They miss a lot of mid-range jumpers, too.
Well, yeah. Win some, lose some. Some good, some bad.
Got a lot of rebounds.
They did get a lot of rebounds. I mean, yeah, I mean, they were 13-1 in conference in the regular season. As you mentioned, the other loss coming in the conference tournament. I don't think it was, you know, mental pressure for Gonzaga. We have to go into – I just think they were a little bit spent, and Baylor was just juiced.
Mm-hmm.
And their athleticism, their speed, their quickness – size, they just, it looked like a, it just physically, it looked like a varsity versus like a freshman team. And I had not said that about Gonzaga all season. You watch them play, you're like, wow, these guys are so skilled. They're so good.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that are like, see, look at Gonzaga, like, that haven't watched Gonzaga absolutely dominate, you know, other big time power, you know, whatever teams. I mean, it's, yeah, oh, these Gonzaga guys are too slow. They're too what? It's like, no, you're just watching Baylor, who's on a completely different plane of the rest of college basketball.
Vol for Life Facebook wanted everyone to know it's because Gonzaga is not in a Power Five conference.
Right,
that's why. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't have the weight room, right? Is that it? Or just they weren't tested?
They didn't bring up the weight room.
I was wondering like what angle that meant.
Like, so this is what happens when they play a big time school.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Don't, they didn't, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. UCLA, small potatoes.
Yeah. Kansas, Auburn, West Virginia, Iowa, Virginia. Yeah.
Virginia, they're a pretty good program. You know, historically.
Yeah. I mean,
Vol for Life. This is a bad week for Vol for Life Facebook page, Davey. Have you fallen back into it now? Because for a stretch, I was really worried about you.
I do think it would benefit Gonzaga if they played in a Power Five conference, just to have to face this type of size and athleticism.
I feel like they schedule fine.
Week in, week out.
Where I do think it would benefit them is more people just watch them.
It's a one possession game if this game happens a week later.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Or even if it's, you know, 2 days in between where they can recover.
It was just such an emotional high for Gonzaga. And
well, you said it. They celebrated like they won the national championship. And then Mark Few was like, oh, yeah, wait, one more. I'm not saying they did anything wrong, but.
No, I mean, that was, like we've talked about, that's going to go down as one of the best tournament games in the history of college basketball.
Well, I mean, Gonzaga is number one in the country in 2-point shooting percentage. Baylor is number one in the country for 3-point shooting percentage.
Wow.
And, you know, when the teams are this good, like, whoever shoots the ball better is going to win, usually. and Baylor got all those offensive rebounds, which made it a 16-point game. I mean, that was the whole math and the whole thing. It's not really that hard. So, I mean, Gonzaga, I feel like Gonzaga's going to have to shoot better than Baylor to beat them. And I agree with Davey. If this game happens in whenever, January, maybe it's different. But, I mean, Baylor only missed two free throws, too.
That's some really good recruiting and just development by Baylor. I mean, to get guys, Chris Lofton, great shooter. Unbelievable. Not the most physically gifted dude in the world, right? You know, it doesn't matter how much time he spends in the weight room, he's still going to be, you know, six, 2.5, 6'3", not going to be overly fast. J.J. Redick, great shooter. Never going to be, you know, the best, you know, point guard or two guard in the NBA. I mean, those guys, they can run, they can defend, they can jump. They're huge, like physically just monsters, and they're the best three-point shooting team in the country.
Yeah.
Like, we made fun of Georgia when they came in here because they were super athletic. You know, like, they looked like Baylor, but they couldn't shoot. They couldn't play basketball.
Yeah.
Baylor, ooh.
Yeah, I said about Georgia, they look like that high school team where all their guys just came off the football field, right, and it's the first game back in the basketball.
And that's what Baylor looked like, except they didn't miss.
They start knocking down threes.
They're 5 for 5 from three to start the game. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and they peaked at the right time. I mean, they played their best two games in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to give credit to
Coach Drew. They moonwalked through the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
They destroyed. Well, the Houston game was closed for 3 minutes. I think Houston was up like 9-7, and then I look up and it's 29-9 or something like that.
Yeah, I think this helps your Houston's not that bad argument.
Yeah,
good. Yeah, good point by you, Dave. Thank you.
Optimism Tuesday.
Suck it, Blitz. Yeah, I'm over here like, oh man, Houston got exposed. No, Baylor's just awesome. I have a friend who's a big Baylor guy.
Hey,
had family that went there. I don't know how I feel about Baylor.
I don't either.
After the Art Briles thing, but I can't blame basketball for that.
My wife was like, Baylor just feels kind of like Penn State. I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, but you don't punish Penn State basketball for
Like, well, hopefully the basketball guys aren't like.
And it feels like they've had some pretty, I'd say, really good teams lately.
Oh,
yeah. That just never, you know, broke through like this. And again, all season, I felt like it was kind of the Gonzaga show, right? Like, oh, it's Gonzaga. They're so good. They're undefeated. And, I don't know, maybe Baylor felt a little bit disrespected, a little bit.
Yeah, they hit that COVID stretch. I mean, they had to, like, miss, I don't know, what was it, a week and a half or something? Okay, so.
I mean, they only played two fewer games than Gonzaga, though. Yeah.
So, bat signal to Coach Barnes, putting the light out. Coach.
The Nate signal.
I hope you're listening. Thanks, if you are. This is season statistics for Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Leading scorers. Guard, 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 guard.
It's five.
Yeah. Their top five scorers, national championship winning Baylor Bears, are guards. Butler, 16.7 points a game. Teague, 15.9. Mitchell, 14 points a game. Flagler, 9.1. And Mayer, 8.1. Their two big guys, Vital and however you say the other guy's name, are average combined 12 points a game. Combined.
So they take a lot of threes, make a lot of threes, don't really rely on the big man.
Big guys just set the screens.
Mm-hmm.
And then dominate the offensive rebounding and then let the guard score more points. I mean, basically.
Big man get ball kicked to guard. Got it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you couldn't come off of them, though. I mean, last night they had, you know, they had mega dunks on the ball screen.
Mm-hmm.
They were good.
Yeah, offensive rebounds. Gonzaga, 5. Baylor, 16. Mm-hmm. Offensive boards. Goodness gracious. So impressive.
Also noticed that, you know, Gonzaga plays a 7-man rotation. Baylor played 8 last night. So, like, Let's just get rid of the whole we need 9 or 10 guys or whatever. Like, can we just find the 7 or 8 that are really good and go with those?
Technically, they played like 13 guys.
Like kind of the 1 minute walk ons and guys or whatever.
They work just as hard as the other guys do, Nate. They keep the team GPA up.
Mm-hmm.
They lift. They practice. They shoot. They work out. They do all that.
I'm just saying. Butler played 31 minutes. Mitchell played 36. Teague played 31. And that's in a game where they had massive leads and could give them more of a break.
Well, not only did Gonzaga really only play 7, their bench players played 10 and 13 minutes.
Well, when you get down, it's kind of just...
Yeah, I know.
Go with who you got.
Well, I'm glad we had something fun to talk about in the first segment. It was a good game. It was really, you know, fun to watch.
Nembhard was awful last night. I know he only had 2 turnovers, but that guy, anytime it was crunch time, was shook. The former Florida transfer was like, this guy.
You got to dunk on the Florida guy, is that it?
Yeah, I'm going to try to. Give me something Tennessee related to talk about. I mean, Timmy showed
Tennessee
up.
Related. You said Florida.
Just to hate on Florida. Just that's Tennessee.
Oh, related. Yeah, of course. It's a birthright.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought Timmy showed up, but they didn't do a good enough job. They didn't give him the ball enough. I mean, he's 5 of 7, 2 of 2 from the line. Like, they just need to get him better touches.
I think a lot of that had to do with Baylor.
Yeah, I know, but that's the thing. Like, Baylor, like, he had a mismatch on some of the shorter, not smaller, but shorter Baylor guys.
None of them were small.
No.
I mean, taller, short, they all looked like.
Did you see Aaron Torres tweet about how, like, most of the Baylor team has either redshirted or sat out a year, you know, in redshirt because they transferred or.
So I did not see that.
Another year in the weight room. Yeah, makes sense.
I don't know. I mean, certain teams you see every year, you never, you know, think, oh, man, these guys are ripped. I feel like Tennessee's weight room staff does a really good job.
No,
like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say anything about that.
No, I'm just saying, I don't think that's an issue, but good Lord.
Torres was saying, like, you know, you got a lot of guys on that team that have had an extra year in college, and that helped.
I mean, it like looked like 5 different Eve Ponds, just different height.
Like when Kentucky has 4 1 and dones, like they don't look like that.
No.
Like they're all like lean basketball looking guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then occasionally they might have one dude, like Booker was in pretty good shape, like pretty built. That literally looked like 5 Eve Ponds bodies mm-hmm. in different sizes. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like when you watch all the other games, even against UCLA, Gonzaga looked more physically imposing.
Right.
Like just the eyeball test, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as this game is tipping off, I'm looking, I'm like, wow, why
I
does...
I told you.
I was like, why does Gonzaga look tiny? I mean, Baylor's just huge. Mm-hmm. Paid off.
It did. 86-70, Baylor, your national champions. I love how, it would have been a COVID year if Gonzaga had won. But once Baylor wins, those same people are like, yep, Baylor, look at this great team, man. Only lost,
underrated the whole
only
season.
Lost 2 games. What a champion. It's like, buddy.
Man, I do feel bad for Gonzaga and Mark Few. To win that game against UCLA that way, you think this is it, this is your year, you're going to break through. Still didn't have a championship.
Nope.
Poor guy.
Nope. Made it to the final game twice.
Will you have a better team than this?
Maybe
I mean,
not.
Statistically, they were right
no,
there. Yeah,
but could you have a better team that plays that gets the Final Four and plays a little better? I mean, they didn't play well last night either. So if he gets a team that plays a little better and then just hits opponents that don't play as well, I mean, it's basketball. It's a one game. That's why I love it. His other team wasn't nearly as good. Still was, could have won the championship if the opponent in that game doesn't play as well. So,
true.
I mean,
should we go to a 3-game final?
I'd like to see these 2 teams play.
I would too.
2 more times.
I would too.
I think Baylor still.
And I like
better.
Davey's idea. I know it's, you know, Saturday, Monday, or whatever. Like, should we give him 2 days between?
Just make the whole Final Four 2 out of 3.
I was going to say that originally, then I was like, that's a lot of basketball.
So this would have been game. So last night would have been game 2 of both series. And then game 3 could be on Wednesday. And then
could
next
you go
weekend,
back-to-back nights and then a day off for game 3 if necessary?
I guess. I just like one day off. So it goes Saturday, Monday, Wednesday. Saturday, Monday, Wednesday.
But you do want the two games on the same night.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you might get a game three in both series or just one series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you win. You get a little more rest. There you go.
Yeah. Just extend it one more weekend.
You like three games, though? You like my three games?
Yeah.
I didn't want to go five or seven. Nah, seven? Come on, nah, are you kidding me?
Best two out of three for just the final four. They do that in you know, college baseball. They got the two different four-team pools. Not pools, but
well, that's why I was thinking about that because I – look, and I'm not dunking on Baylor, but I feel like we kind of got robbed last night because Baylor just came out, hit five threes, and it was just kind of – it just felt over 10 minutes in. And I'm with you. I would love to see these two teams play one more time at least and just see what happens. But like you said, it's a one game final, hot team, better shooting team, usually wins.
Well, and you can complain and say, well, Baylor had an easier path, but I mean, they beat up Houston early, and kind of earned that Cruz job. So
exactly,
I don't know. I think Gonzaga. I still think this was a great Gonzaga team, but Baylor was just better. And in a normal non COVID year, maybe Baylor's 33-2, and it's even more impressive or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows? Come back with more. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out.
Cleat talk. We'll get to the legal beagle segment later.
Big legal beagles update coming at around 8 o'clock.
That's Nate and Alex's softball team for those who are unfamiliar.
So we got to get into Catgate, Houston.
I don't know what to be more embarrassed about. The fact that a football player beat up a cat, or that people are defending it. What are we doing? David Ubbin with a great update on Catgate, really? Is that what we're...
I don't know what you want to call it. Call it whatever you want to.
The most disturbing story in Tennessee football history?
No.
Think about it, man.
I mean, maybe.
Like, you get in a fight at a party, it's two people, emotions run high, you get in a fight.
Now, we've battled some Title IX stuff. I think that's still going to take the cake.
I won't disagree with that.
Little teaser, almost a fight at the Legal Beagles game last night.
That's what I heard. I heard that. Heard there might have been a little home plate brawl.
Altercation.
Dave, we're not talking, like, the cat. You're a little late on the, go ahead. Anyway, that's Davey Hudson, ladies and gentlemen.
That was perfectly timed, yeah. Actually.
As soon as we get into the serious story.
I give Davey high marks for waiting through the national championship. Ho-hum regular sports topic to get to Tennessee football.
Now he's like, oh, yeah. My time to shine.
Yeah.
Davey, it was a six-month-old kitten.
I'm not defending this by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, no, I know. I am just
saying, when you raise situations up to abuse of an animal versus what we could probably argue is abuse of a human.
I don't think you have to argue that.
I think those are apples and oranges, man.
Sometimes it's okay, I tell my kids this, to just, you don't have to compare everything.
True.
They can just be kind of separately whatever. We don't have to power rank everything.
I guess that, you know? a lot of that Title IX stuff, like, obviously he was acquitted, but like the A.J. Johnson situation, right? Like, it was a lot of, like, unknown.
It was murky.
Yeah.
This seems
pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
According to David Ubbin's article in The Athletic. The kitten got into some chicken wings and Beasley, I mean, put it in the toilet,
locked it,
closed
the
lid,
yeah, kicked it,
held it up by the tail, broke the tail. Tail's broken.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The cat has blood clots in its kidneys, brain damage, can't walk. He has been indefinitely suspended from the football team.
Right.
The investigation is ongoing, and currently no charges have been filed, but David Ubbin in his article has screenshots of Beasley's girlfriend, the other roommate, texting the cat owner. I think we've seen the last of Aaron Beasley in a Tennessee uniform.
We're just on Tennessee campus. I mean, this is a situation. We can set this aside from football for a minute. I don't see a situation. Again, this has not been proven yet, and I do want to say it, but everything looks as though Aaron Beasley is the culprit in this situation, and I don't see how the university would even allow him back on campus, let alone this be a football conversation. He'll go before the student conduct board, and they're just going to say he's out. Like, I don't see any other situation unfolding from this, and I mean, we'll continue to get into it, but this is a situation where I understand people come from different backgrounds, different ways in which they are raised.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
This is still a situation of tendencies that are very troubling and need to be addressed. I've got some comments from some people that I'll read later in the show, but that is also concerning. But I mean, you just look at the situation as a whole.
No, that's what I led with. I seriously don't know what I'm more embarrassed by. The story itself, which is awful, or the fact that people are defending it and saying it's not that big of a deal.
Just because
he plays football for Tennessee. Like, I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Ubbin's article. We're talking about, like, the vet. This is per Scarborough, who was quoted by Ubbin. But the vet stated in the records that the clots in his bladder and kidney cannot occur unless there was blunt force trauma. Like, I mean...
Yeah.
We know the cat was beaten. Like,
Kaylee Scarborough, a student, arrived at her apartment Thursday morning and discovered Nugget, that's the name of the cat, her gray domestic short-haired cat, hiding underneath her dresser. Scarborough said he squealed and clawed at her when she tried to pull him out of the space. When she tried to put him down, she noticed his back legs wouldn't support him and he was unable to walk. Quote, and that's when my roommate Kenley walked up to me and said, and was like, hey, I just remembered. She said that she was in her bed around like 10-ish or 11-ish, and all she said she heard was my other roommate screaming, quote, no, Aaron, please, you can't do that. No, Aaron, please. And then she started crying, and then she heard my cat Nugget squeal like 3 times, a loud squeal, loud enough for her to hear it in her room from the living room. Bunting told police she heard Zoe Phillips saying, quote, you can't do that, and crying, according to the report. Scarborough said Bunting sent her a screenshot of a message from Phillips, a copy of which she provided to police and The Athletic. It says, don't say this, please, but he told me he put Nugget in the toilet last night after he ate all our food. Thank you. I'm kind of livid with him. And then there's another one. He held Nug by his tail. Nugget, baby, be traumatized.
Did he say...
only kind of livid with him?
Yeah, that was kind of weird, too. I'm kind of livid. Kind of?
Damn near killed a cat, like, right in front of your eyes.
Also, is that text saying that the cat ate all of their food or after Aaron Beasley ate all their food?
No, after the cat had eaten all their food because they left the door open.
Yeah, quote, apparently they had
How
left.
Long would it take a cat, a kitten, to eat one chicken wing, let alone...
just the way they texted it. I mean, apparently they had left Zoe's bedroom door open with a box of wings sitting out, and Nugget had gotten into the wings, Scarborough said. She also said that Nugget allegedly was held up by his tail and ended up in the toilet with the lid shut. Phillips told police that the cat eating their food has been a constant issue, but she did not see Beasley hit the cat or put the cat in the toilet, according to the report. She said Beasley locked him in the bathroom and left the apartment shortly after. Phillips said she let the cat out around 3 a.m. Thursday morning, and the cat ran into Scarborough's room, according to police. So who is Phillips? Is that the girlfriend? Is she taking up for Beasley a little bit and saying it wasn't that bad, or am I messing this up? I can't keep it straight.
Yes, I believe Phillips is the girlfriend.
Okay.
And, like, I think it's Bunting is the roommate.
And then Scarborough's the cat owner.
Yes.
Yep. Bunting declined an interview request from The Athletic. Phillips did not respond to a request for an interview. So, yeah, so Phillips was kind of backtracking a little bit, sounds like, and trying to say, no, I didn't see him do it. He just locked the cat in the bathroom.
But even though the other roommate heard.
Yeah. Well, and she'd already texted
it. I know.
Put him in the toilet.
So. I know. Josh's Journal tweets in, says, all because the poor cat got into some chicken wings. What a psycho. I don't want to go too far, but I don't know, man. It's not a good sign. Mm-hmm. And then Will tweets in and says, it's one thing if you had some random pesky stray cat killing your chickens or something and you shot it. Totally different when you torture a cat because you didn't put your food up and just want to hurt something.
Yep.
Dude's got issues. Yeah. That's...
And not an adult cat either. A six-month-old kitten.
And I'll be honest, like, I don't know how, like, fast cats grow. Like, how big is a six-month-old kitten?
I mean...
Like, dogs at six months are...
Not the little tiny one, but I mean, they grow pretty fast, but not a big, full cat either, I would think.
It doesn't matter. I'm not saying it matters. I was just curious.
I would say medium. I don't know. Like...
Just such a troubling story, man. And as Davey said, like, the people that are defending it are just trying to minimize it as much as possible because we might need him at linebacker. No.
Yeah, well, what's really funny is that the craziest psycho type dude on Twitter that I think I've blocked. I don't know. I don't even see these, but people are sending the screenshots. Russell Smith tweeted this 9 hours ago last night, I guess. The quote, it's just a cat portion of our fan base is an interesting bunch. A stark reminder to hug your kids often lest they grow up to be cold, soulless brutes. And then this particular person who claims
former
to be
former member of the 37.
Yeah, who used to call into the show and is a Tennessee fan.
Big Butch guy.
It's wild the Fox News level control the FSK dudes, that's us, Fox Sports Knoxville, will have over this fan base. The man's not been charged. Hell, it's been going on 4 days, and police supposedly hasn't even tried to question him. Doubt this goes anywhere. So basically, he's saying no big deal. But then if you look at his other tweets about other athletes, he's got a quote tweet about Dalvin Cook, who doesn't play for Tennessee, mind you. Animal abuse will do that. And another quote about another animal being injured where he complains all about that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so if
there's a special place below hell for people who abuse animals, he said,
unless they play inside linebacker for my beloved Tennessee Volunteers, like,
and
what?
Get charged. They have to be charged. There has to be charges.
Like, what a crappy take. I mean, I mean, look, it is fine to be biased about your team,
sure,
on block charge calls, pass interference, and I mean everything. Everything involved with the sport itself, but when you start forgiving giving people, guys, a pass or girls a pass because they're on your team and they're your
pretending
squad
it didn't happen
for crimes like you are Penn State, you are Baylor, like that's how that crap happens. You just let stuff go because they're on the football team and you end up with guys that act this way because they've gotten away with stuff their whole life because they're. What do you study, booby? Football? Like, I mean, come on. Yeah, like, get. I don't know. I would rather Josh Heupel just clean them all out and go 0-12. I really would.
I mean,
Lou Holtz went 0-for 1 year and then went 8-4, won the Outback Bowl the next season. It's not crazy. Just get rid of them all, Josh. We will support you. If you get rid of them all and run a necessary roughness style team and
all the
bad apples. Yeah, I don't know who they are. No, I don't know. I'm sure Coach Heupel and those guys are figuring out who doesn't like to practice, who doesn't like to work out.
Ever since he's gotten here, it's like one after the other.
Yeah. Who needs a birthday wish? Like just GFO. Like for real.
Culture, man.
It is. I mean,
and that's what he's working on. But
yeah, is it a Heupel issue right now?
No, it's just, and I'm sure the last staff was really, really good at covering all this up, right? You know, I've been at Bama, I've been at Georgia. Oh, guys, you know, don't get caught with the gun in the wheat. Like,
there's still stories that haven't hit light.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, Josh.
I mean, by the way, it's possible in the state of Tennessee that this could be an actual crime. Like he could go to jail for just under a year if it's deemed a, you know, class A misdemeanor, $2,500 fine too. Like, he legitimately might go to jail for this if they'll, you know, if they prove it and if the roommate wants to press charges. And Davey, I think you brought up a really good point. Like, people are raised differently. Alex, you mentioned that. Like, certain, you know, the way you grow up and how pets are treated as part or separate from the family, that matters. This wasn't his pet. This is someone else's.
Nope.
Someone else's cat. Someone else's cat who wasn't home. It's just, No, Nate, I'm with you, man. Like,
I'm just done. Like, this program, I mean, we joke about taking a year off, but they, like, maybe the year off.
We did that.
Maybe the year off is just get rid of everybody you got to get rid of and just take it on the chin for a year. I mean, it can't be more frustrating to watch them than it was to watch Pruitt's team last year.
Can't be.
I mean, hell, they go 2-10, and if they, you know, score a few points here and there, we find a couple unsung stars that we can build off of and get some guys in that. I mean, I just don't. I mean, it's just one thing after another. We have like zero linebackers now. It was already a problem. It's just getting worse. Final segment, hour number one. Yeah, the sad part of this stuff, and it's been, I mean, it's well documented in the criminal world. I mean, the not criminal world. That's not the way to say that. The
profiles.
Yes. Yeah. The people that study all this stuff and the pattern of behavior and what, like, it really, like, you can take out the specific details and just kind of put it with, like, just whatever variable you want. Like, overreacting to some stupid incident, right? It's like when a person beats their kid, it's like, well, they got a C in math class, or they spilled the milk, or the kid, or in this case the cat, did something completely insignificant if it was a regular real world loving parental figure or pet owner, right? I mean, pets get into food, it's what they do.
Yeah.
Like, children make mistakes, it's what they do.
You ever had a pet that didn't like a treat? They didn't sit next to you as you ate, maybe give you the eyes or the look.
So the first story that comes my mind is every year at Christmas, the kids in all the surrounding areas, I know Knox County, each class will do a gingerbread house.
Mm-hmm.
And the class will decorate it. It'll have a theme. You know, the older classes, they'll look really good. They're really creative. They're all different types of stuff. The younger classes, you know, the kids get to just be a part of it, and it's fun. And then those gingerbread houses go to the Fantasy of Trees at the downtown convention center, and Fantasy of Trees raises all this money for East Tennessee Children's Hospital and all these other organizations. And I don't know the whole where it all goes, but it's one of the staple kind of like fundraising events around Christmas time in Knoxville for all of, you know, this area. And so my wife was one of like the class moms or whatever for, I think, my son's class. And so it was her job to put the gingerbread house together and let it sit and like glue together the night before and then take it in, and then the kids are all going to decorate everything. Well, these things are pretty big. People actually, you know, they bid or they buy them at the. You know, got to be done right. All this stuff. So she had spent all this time getting it put together correctly, and it's the night before the thing's got to go into school, and something happened in the house or whatever. I don't even remember what happened, but for some reason, all of us ended up outside, kind of like impromptu because of some situation. And we come in, and my dog is standing on top of the table, just eating gingerbread house as fast as he can go. Mm-hmm. And my wife, she almost beat me, not the dog, because, you know, I was the last one in the house.
Sure.
She was like, you know, what are you doing? You know, I mean, nobody.
No.
Nobody got it.
I mean, I think everyone who's had...
No one blamed the dog.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
She's like, She's like, what'd you? I was like, you didn't.
I get it.
You know, yeah.
Had a buddy over.
No
one
time. Blamed the dog. The dog eats. That's what the dog does.
I can't even remember who made it. There used to be this like double decker thin crust pizza where like it was like crust, cheese, crust, and then, you know, sauce, cheese, whatever. Me and my friend, we really liked this pizza. So we ordered one day, and he actually had to leave. I think his mom was coming to pick him up. So he grabs a couple slices, pizza's on the table. I walk him out, say hey to his mom, come back in. Both corgis on the table, just munching the pizza. I mean, obviously they know they're not supposed to be on the table, but I should have put the pizza somewhere else, made sure a chair wasn't there. They could just like double up and hop up there. It's on me. That's my fault. I didn't throw them across the room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you can, so insert like, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, did my wife, you know, have to put in a ton more work and redo the gingerbread house? Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that the end of life as we know it? Is that reason enough to freak out and completely lose your mind where you might beat something? No. So, you know, child or animal does something that in the grand scheme of things is insignificant, like get into your chicken wings. I mean, order some more, bro. Like, come on.
Seriously.
And then you've got super, I mean, it really doesn't matter who it is, but fill in the blank with super temper tantrum adult mm-hmm. that shouldn't do that. And then, which, I mean, I don't know. We can all lose our temper, maybe yell something, whatever. But then, like, once you cross over to brute force of an animal or a person, once you cross that...
And like, not like a corrective teaching. You know, guys will have a shock collar or they'll spank their dog or what. Like, this is a completely different level of violence towards an animal.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a moment where in life at some point, everyone's had that moment where you kind of start, you feel yourself losing control, and that's when normal people take a deep breath or go outside or mm-hmm. or whatever. You know, I don't know. If your kid does something...
Or just realize and stop.
Or if your kid does something really, really, really bad and you just, you know, kind of want to... Even if you're kind of a spanker and you just, you want to spank them right then and you go... I'm gonna wait a second mm-hmm, here. Like mm-hmm. I need to calm down and figure out the appropriate whatever, you know,
right.
punishment,
discipline. Yeah,
we're gonna go with. I mean, this is just classic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.